As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
If the thing is, well, you're getting a coach in there who's connected to the locker room. Luke Walton had the locker room, right? I mean, like, this wasn't a player-driven thing. So, like, you know, even if Alvin has it that's not...
I think some stuff happened at the end. Okay. Not meaning stuff... I'm not saying any sort of fireworks internally.
I mean, the Bagley stuff is, like, tough.
The Bagley stuff, and I'm just... Let me just contextualize real fast later.
Welcome to the Athletic NBA Show, Monday through Friday, on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Welcome to Tampering.
For this beautiful game of basketball that we all love and talk about every single day.
With Sam Panic.
To be able to bring people together.
What do you do, baby?
Reportedly at the center of an NBA investigation
into tampering accusations.
And the message to executives in the league is
stop talking about players on other teams.
What did I do?
The charges filed.
Impermissible contact.
Was it right or wrong?
Tampering charges are really difficult to prove.
You know me, I talk.
Kind of awkward to even talk about it. I can't even mention teams anymore.
Ask me what I like to play with Kevin Durant.
The trial you want with tampering.
They're always ahead of the rules.
It's not rocket science.
I have tampered with the guys.
I didn't tamper. I'm just telling you what happened. I'm just telling you what happened.
Hello and welcome to the Tampering Podcast, part of the Athletic NBA Show Network. I am Sam Amick, here as always, national NBA writer at The Athletic with the usual suspects. We got Fred Katz out east, Anthony Slater out west. We're going to get into a lot of things today. First and foremost, it's just not every day when you have fisticuffs in the NBA. Young Isaiah Stewart of the Detroit Pistons, very upset with LeBron James. Certainly get into what happened in Detroit. Going to talk some Kings, the not-so-stunning firing of Coach Luke Walton. Talking Warriors, not just because Anthony Slater is here, but because these guys who have won a few championships appear to be back in new form, and plenty to get into there. The list continues from there. Gentlemen, what's going on?
I want to hear about our Black Friday deal, Sam. That's what
thank
I'm
you,
Mike.
You are such a good co-host. Look at you putting it on the tee.
A good company man.
Good company man. Good
better than a co-host.
If it's, I don't like the tee reference. This is a basketball pod. If it's not getting put on the tee, what does it get? It's an oop, I guess. That's a nice pass for the lob. Thank you. Here we go. Company time and good company time. This is very worth your next 30 seconds and worth your next $12 over the course of the next year. For $1 a month right now at The Athletic, if you are somehow not part of our family just yet, you're not reading the great coverage across all sports, not just the NBA, but so much good stuff in there. We have a Black Friday deal and Cyber Monday as well. You get all The Athletic's great writing for just $1 a month for 12 months. Go to theathletic.com/NBA show before midnight on Monday the 29th. Lock in the very best price of the year. No lie, this is the best deal that I can remember that we've ever had. And the type of thing where you jump in, you're going to love it. I guarantee you, you're never going to leave. So come join us. Gents, we got a lot of things popping today that move the needle, so to speak. You know what I mean? Coaching firings are worth diving into and exploring, and certainly one that's in my backyard that I have a good feel for that we'll talk about. You know, teams playing well, teams not playing well. But let's start in Detroit. As I'm watching this situation with the Lakers and the Pistons, first of all, I don't know where you fall on the old kind of the verdict of the play itself, but you know, LeBron's, I think two things can be true, that it could be somewhat inadvertent what took place, but it also can be a closed fist that hit Isaiah right in the face in the kind of way that I just don't blame him for being irate about. From there, like so many other people, my goodness, the flashback that you have to the Malice at the Palace was wild for me, because you hear in the background on the, you know, the PA announcer telling the crowd immediately, stay in your seats. Yeah.
Legendary PA announcer John Mason. And I know as you're sitting there thinking, because like you were almost froze, like you're obviously watching what Stewart's doing, but I was definitely like monitoring, like nothing from the crowd is coming, right?
Well, and I just kind of ironically recently I looked up footage from Malice at the Palace for a story I was doing, and so your mind goes there, and you know you're hoping that nobody does anything stupid. And to you know their credit, they were making it really clear. I think the messaging was like, "Stay in your seats. You know you will be kicked out and prosecuted and sent to jail." And I, to my knowledge, nothing happened. But man, Isaiah was obviously relentless, and he did that kind of, you know, rope it up thing where you tell the security guards and the players around you and the coaches, I'm good.
I'm not good.
And the longer he's riled up, of course, like our incredible Pistons beat writer, James Edwards, described it, you know, his face, he wrote that it looked like a lava cake with the blood flowing, which, you know, is a violent picture, but that's what it was. And you know, the sad part, or I guess the tough part to watch, is just that human thing where it's like, you could just tell, I mean, he sees blood literally, and you're just going to get more and more upset. Thankfully didn't make his way to LeBron, and it didn't kind of go to the next level, but how did that whole saga hit you guys?
How about when he went to the back and you thought he was maybe curling around the arena? We all know how NBA arenas work. And then like you could tell the Lakers bench started to turn to their tunnel, like that's what's about to happen here. Anyway, Fred, go ahead.
No, that was exactly what I was going to say. I honestly, I don't know why. I feel like I was the only person who the thought of the crowd just didn't even cross my brain when I was watching it. But when they're leaving the court, because I got a call from someone right after it happened, from a buddy just being like, are you watching this Lakers game? And so I tuned in right after, like while Isaiah Stewart was going after LeBron on the court. And as they're walking to the outside, it's like there's a concourse that goes around the whole arena. And once you get in the back, you guys know as well as me that the security person who just, you know, who mans the hallway to the locker room might be some extremely jacked, strong, formidable 6'5" person. Or it just might be some regular old human being who happens to work that post. Either way, probably not someone who is going to stop Isaiah Stewart, who's one of the strongest people in the NBA. And I was like, oh man, like he is really pissed. Is he gonna just dart down the hallway to connect with LeBron there? Like I totally, that was all I was thinking when they were going into the concourse.
I mean, that move is kind of as old as time. And again, this is a regional reference that's on brand for me. You know, Doug Christie fighting with Rick Fox back in the day, Kings, Lakers.
Here's the Kings content.
And I forget who all was involved, but I think that there was a like run behind the stands move as well. I forget who initiated, but you know, it was kind of like a trying to get to Shaq type of thing, which good luck with that. So you see that move. I feel like Matt Barnes might have done that at some point.
Didn't Jimmy Butler just a couple of weeks ago like pointed to the back, even though it wasn't apparently yes. for the Jokic? But and then, you know, there's the photo from I believe the Denver Post of the Heat kind of sitting there waiting, and it was like I think Andy Ellsberg was like stopping them.
Yes,
you know, there was one. This is when DeMarcus Cousins was on the Pelicans, where DeMarcus Cousins and Kevin Durant got into it, and then in the back, Cousins was trying to get to KD, and there was a great picture of like a security guard breaking them up in the back tunnel. It's just crazy how NBA arenas work, and certain ones lend itself to more danger than others.
No doubt. I mentioned James Edwards.
Hold on, quick. Can I mention most famous one we forgot about? The Staples Center one with the Rockets and the Clippers a couple of years ago.
The secret corridor. There was a Melo KG thing too, which I don't think was really real, but you know they had a disagreement over cereal as well, and that was something.
Yeah,
I did. I liked, you know, we are guilty just in media in general and society of just, all right, it's a fight, it's violence, and we dive in, we talk about it. I liked the way that James Edwards humanized Isaiah and kind of knowing full well that a moment like this happens, the general audience is not going to know who Isaiah Stewart is, and he contextualized everything and talked about his upbringing and Rochester, New York, and how he's, you know, with the organization, known as just a fantastic young man and a guy who just plays his ass off. And you're seeing that he pisses off, you know, kind of elder, more prominent players. Blake Griffin and Isaiah got into it not too long ago, but has a good career ahead of him. Obviously, you know, this was a tough moment. He's going to get suspension here for sure. But he's, in terms of that moment itself, you know, 6'8", 250 coming at you. I mean, LeBron is just a mountain of a man, and there's just not many people on the planet that I would think he might have a hard time with. But I've reached a point in watching this one where I'm going, man, LeBron does not want him finding his way all the way to him.
I would say really good job by Pistons arena security, league security, Lakers, the Lakers team. Cade Cunningham was like tracking Isaiah Stewart basically everywhere. I thought they
vision,
did a good job.
That vision that young Cade has.
Yeah. Maybe. And then, you know, you mentioned James' story. And when I read James' story, reading about Isaiah Stewart, and you know, Fred could probably relate to this, I kind of thought of a young Steven Adams. Remember Steven Adams got like five guys ejected as a rookie, including like
Zach Randolph punched him in the face and got suspended for a game seven because of it.
Yep. And, Vince Carter, I remember, came with like a flying elbow, like late career, very mature Vince Carter. He got ticked at him because, you know, Steven was so physical. He came in with that rugby style. Now, Steven was known as like not retaliating. And that's kind of where, and you know, reading James, who knows it better than anyone, that's where they're trying to, you know, kind of tame Isaiah Stewart in those heat of the moment to try to like kind of settle the nerves, even when you I guess incite somebody to bump you, push you, whatever. That, I don't know. What'd you guys think of the hit? I mean, LeBron might be looking at one game.
It was bad. Go ahead, Fred.
Oh yeah. No, I was just going to say it's a weird situation for the league, because if he is looking at one game, that one game is the one time he's coming to the Garden for a nationally televised game on TNT on what's now their big night on a Tuesday night. So
wait. Are you indicating that business influences might occasionally
Fred,
bleed into
Fred,
the
a long
objective.
Investigation is needed. No decision needs to be made until Wednesday night.
Exactly. That is exactly correct. I mean, look, we can pretend like all of these things are done with no bias at all as to who the next opponent is, but I think we all know that a suspension might be a little bit more likely if it was a Wednesday in Oklahoma City as opposed to a TNT game that's, you know, going to be the most watched nationally televised game of the night. So that's something that has to come into the equation as well. I don't know I can't tell, because I see one angle and it looks accidental, and I see another angle and it looks on purpose. I kind of have come to the conclusion that he did mean to hit him, but he definitely didn't mean to do what actually happened. Like, I think he meant to swipe at him, but I don't think he meant to cleanly punch him in the face.
I agree with
that.
I mean,
LeBron's got 18 years. I'm just, my thing is a body of work where he doesn't punch people, you know, like he plays hard, and he, I think it was inadvertent, like, you know, closing the fist was a terrible choice. I think he did not know that the fist was going to land right on the eye. And I don't know if I've missed an update, but the other thought I had was just concern, you know, for Isaiah's eye. I just really didn't like seeing that kind of blood around there. I don't
James
know.
Said
I know
they eight said stitches in his
right.
story.
So hopefully no other damage in there. I mean, that's a pretty scary part of the body. So I don't think LeBron meant to do it. I also kind of think, to pivot a little bit here, guys, that we bury the lead from a basketball standpoint. We should get into this a little bit. I mean, Lakers were down like 20 when it happened, not looking good. This is a Pistons team that, and again, we'll talk Kings later. I mean, it's a Pistons team that Luke Walton survived a few more days because the Kings beat the hell out of these Pistons just a few days ago.
You want to know what happened 2 days after that Kings game? The Warriors rested Steph Curry, Draymond Green,
and beat the Pistons.
Andre Iguodala went in and beat the Pistons. So not a good Pistons team is what you're saying. And they
100%.
They were up big. And I've been as critical as anybody on the Lakers early in the season and the flaws and the personnel changes that I don't like. But I actually think it was kind of a big win for them to come back.
You think it's got substance beyond last night?
Yes. 37-17 fourth quarter.
Even with no LeBron on the floor? I mean, what does it matter if LeBron's not even on the floor?
This is why it matters. Anthony Davis woke up. Anthony Davis was maybe the best player in the bubble. And the bubble was not that long ago. The bubble was like 14 months ago now at this point, 15 months. Like, remember, Anthony Davis, by the end of the finals, LeBron got finals MVP. But you're like, Davis, over the course of the playoffs, including game winners against the Nuggets, was probably the best NBA player in the bubble. And then he obviously had a super down season last year. He's been really sluggish to start this season. They go into Milwaukee the other day, which felt like this, you know, LeBron wasn't playing. It was this one-on-one test against Giannis, and he just kind of shrunk. And they haven't seen life from him. And then suddenly he woke up in the fourth, including that sequence late to clinch the game where Cade Cunningham tries to get a step back three off. He swats Cade Cunningham's three right back to him. So Cade Cunningham tries to drive on him. He swats Cade Cunningham's layup, and then he goes down. Russ sets him up, scores the layup, roars. And it was like, whoa, this was the bubble Anthony Davis, except with a crowd. That's the Anthony Davis that changes the team. That's the Anthony Davis that when we discuss this team, we go LeBron and AD will drag them wherever they need to go. And I just thought maybe it was the heat of the moment. Maybe it was LeBron going out the way he did and the emotions. But that Anthony Davis finally showed up. And that's where I think it could be big, because that looked like that felt playoffy in the fourth quarter. And that's where the Lakers could be dangerous, if it's just like a ferocious Davis.
I'm buying most of that, although I love, you know, that felt playoffy with the Pistons.
Environment. I just mean like,
I'm just saying. Yeah.
Like the type of force Anthony Davis should play with in a playoffs.
Yep.
Yeah, because Isaiah Stewart wasn't there to be physical.
Yes, that's the other thing.
You know, what's funny? We talked Lakers a little bit last week, and
Fred, let's gang up on Slater. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I trended more towards, let's see, LeBron's been out, Kendrick Nugent's been out, Ariza's been out, and you guys were more down, which is definitely the more popular sentiment. And I have drifted more towards the negative, even after the win. And I don't even necessarily disagree with Slater, but I think the biggest problem for them is just that we haven't seen evidence that when their best players are there, that they're playing well. I mean, I kind of expected Westbrook and AD to have better chemistry together, and they just don't look good when they're playing together, and they're playing those guys together a lot. They're trying to maintain those guys together on the floor a lot as opposed to maximize their minutes apart. And they don't look very good playing together. The Lakers are getting outscored by 6 points per 100 possessions when both those guys are on the floor. And look, if we think the Lakers are going to be good, like really good, like, you know, like win the West or come close to winning the West, good. Even just Western Conference Finals or win a playoff series, good. Ultimately, what they need is they need their best players. They need to be really good when their best players are on the floor, because that's just how this team is built, right? When Westbrook, LeBron, and AD are on the floor together right now, and it's a limited amount of games because LeBron has been hurt, it's 140 minutes total. But this is not encouraging. You know how they're doing when those three guys are on the floor?
Talk to me.
They're minus 2.2 per 100 possessions. They can't get outscored. They can't lose those minutes.
Just look when Westbrook's off the floor compared to on. I mean, he's like a. I mean, we've talked about it. We don't need to dive deep into it. Westbrook's a huge problem, and I don't.
Slater, you know this too. To dig deeper on that angle, because all right, you got your OKC background covering Russ all those years, but with your Warriors background, you know, and you go back to, not to go too deep, but you know, the whole Kevin Durant recruitment with you know, one of the things that buoyed it from the Warriors standpoint was their intel and their knowledge of how Kevin viewed Russ's game, and kind of now by proxy, it's like how most of the NBA views Russ's game, and the idea that opponents on the regular are just in scouting wise are looking at him going, yeah, Russ, just do whatever you want to do. And we love it because you guys fall apart when that happens.
Well, you know, particularly the let him shoot the jumper. And to be honest, like I think people still talk about him like he's the OKC version, and he's not. He used to be automatic from 18 feet and an 80% free throw shooter and ferocious. Like he had a dunk last night when that seemed to really kind of like shift momentum in the game. And that you don't see that as often, not nearly as often. He doesn't finish at the rim like he used to. And meanwhile, he's still dragging around a lot of the negatives, the turnover prone nature, the fact that he kills your floor spacing. He falls asleep defensively. I mean, hey, guess what? That's a huge issue with the Lakers early in the season. The defense probably bigger than the offense. And so much that Frank Vogel's trying all these odd lineups. He went small for a while. He's having Avery Bradley out there, even though Avery Bradley, couldn't even make the Warriors roster. Essentially, Avery Bradley's been starting for the Lakers, which is obviously a defense first move, but hasn't been working. DeAndre Jordan slid back into the starting lineup. That's a guy who got cut by the Nets. So I think a lot of that is trying to figure out lineups that work with Russell Westbrook and work on both sides with him. And it just hasn't worked.
Right.
One of the most fascinating parts of Westbrook's career to me, of the gazillion fascinating things, is what in the world happened to his shooting? Like, he never speaks on it in any detail, and it's kind of impossible to figure out because I don't think anything drastic fundamentally happened with his shooting. And to be clear, he was never some sort of great shooter. But usually, as a guy falls off later in his career, what happens is athleticism starts to go, because that's what happens when you get older. And shooting can maintain, or even, if you're like a Jason Kidd type, it might even get better. And there were a lot of people in the league 7 years ago, like smart scouts, that kind of stuff, who looked at his free throw shooting. He was always in the 80s from the line. He was consistently like 80 to 85% every year from the line, and thought that can be a good indicator of adding some kind of jump shot, or at least improving as a jump shooter. And so there were people who were betting, he can improve on that. And what's so weird is he's just become this so much worse. His mid-range shot has completely fallen off, and the free throw shooting is just beyond strange, to where he was 80 to 85 every single year without exception. And then all of a sudden he dips into the 70s and then the 60s, and he's like a 65% free throw shooter consistently year after year now. It's such a weird development. And he's kind of changed his routines a little bit, and they've made these rules about stuff you can do in between free throws and stuff, which he said threw him off like 5 years ago. But that doesn't explain this weird way that he's fallen off as a jump shooter. And now with the way that teams defend, I mean, they just don't guard him at all when he doesn't have the ball on the perimeter.
He's had several knee surgeries, which I don't think get talked about too much, but I think the athleticism isn't what it used to be. And I think that affects a jump shooter some. He's not like a super pure shooter. He's a guy who's had to build that jump shot. I mean, he built that 19 footer by just like repetition. And I think, if the knee's not feeling necessarily as good, or just, the lower body's not there, it's clearly a jump shot that can get thrown off very easily.
He was one of those guys where the jump shot was, was capital on the jump, where it was, it was not a set shot by any means.
For sure.
All right, guys, I'm going to pivot and go from a team that's struggling, that's going to be part of the conversation all year long in those Lakers, to a squad, Slater, who is dominating. Before we talk Warriors, I will say, because we got to show some love and respect around the association, on Basketball Buzz today, they talked about the Phoenix Suns and their long winning streak. So I don't want anybody thinking we're skipping over the Suns. We'll talk more Suns down the road. They look fantastic.
Can I just say one thing quick about the Suns? 12 in a row, obviously. They play the Warriors 3 times in the next month. 2 times next week, by the way. They're playing Monday, so the morning we might be talking next week. They play Monday and I think Wednesday or Thursday, home and home, and then they play on Christmas Day. So that's a sparkly taste of matchup.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't know what, Lakers were supposed to be in that conversation. Now it's Warriors-Suns at the top of the West.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
But man, they're not only looking great, but we got to start talking about Mr. Klay Thompson and the idea that he, as you and Shams Charania reported, is on track for a pre-Christmas return. Before you dive in, Slater, it's funny, and you guys know I live near Sacramento, got NorCal roots. My oldest son, Ryder, 15 years old now, once got to meet Steph and Klay. And it's funny because the only NBA presence that is not in my office in terms of any sort of memorabilia is this picture that he to this day keeps in his room. It's got Steph and Klay and my son, and he enjoys it. And he's not even a big basketball kid, but it was a cool moment for him. I walk by and I see it every once in a while, and it's like, man, like you don't see Steph and Klay together anymore. And this is something that was part of, you know, this world that we all work in. You know, it was the, you know, one of the best dynamic duos in the history of the game. And I saw a tweet the other day. I think, I mean, what are we coming up on, like 880 days?
It's eight. Today is day 893 since Klay Thompson last played an NBA game. It'll be 900 next Monday.
Right.
Which is
so
crazy.
I mean, this is a huge positive. You don't have to be a Warriors fan, just a basketball fan. These dudes have done special things together. And to have Klay back, I mean, is the vibe around the team, you know, already great because of how they're playing, but I got to imagine, you know, a lot of buzz because of that guy coming back.
Yeah, and it has been for a few weeks because I think of a thing that I could see it turning with Klay, him turning the corner, was he started like really shooting out in front of us. Reporters are walking in where early in training camp, like if we came in, he was, you know, he'd go. Let's say it was on the main court during shoot around. Okay, he's going to the bunker. And at one point, there are some people that record a lot of practice when they walk in, and he was like telling cameraman, like, stop recording me. And he ain't doing that. He hasn't been doing that for a while now, including to the point.
He's waving them over. Come on over here.
Well, I mean, yeah. they were debuting their like new city jerseys, the black city jerseys, that on a night, and about 2.5 hours before tip, he goes out to the main court where, you know, like TV cameras are setting up. There's some pregame stuff. There's obviously like the NBC cameras are up there, you know, to film anything that's happening on the court. He's wearing the full city jersey and he's going through like a really intense shooting routine, you know, coming off pin downs, you know, like three in transition style stuff. And he's doing that. Like clearly the broadcast is going to show any of this that they want to. And that was like, to me, that was like, man, he must be feeling good. And you've got that sense lately. And then they go on this recent road trip and they didn't bring Klay on the road trip. He'd gone on a few, but they left him back in the Bay Area. And they did that because he was ready for 5-on-5, which, you know, we all know, like that is the last step, like unconstrained, unrestricted 5-on-5 against NBA level athletes. And they brought in, you know, free agents that are like G League guys, NBA guys. I mean, me and Shams reported Dante Exum, not only was in there, but is staying in the Bay Area to be part of these scrimmages that are going to keep going on over the next couple of weeks. And he's, from what I'm hearing, he's looking really good. Now, tiring quickly, you know, 893 days without being in an NBA environment.
That's wild, man. Yeah. That is so long.
It is. It is. In middle of a prime, too. And the last time, the crazy thing is the last time we saw him, might have been one of his best games. It was game 6 Klay in an NBA Finals. He had 30 points. He was out playing Kawhi Leonard in that game. Sam, you were there. And one of the like, you know, craziest injury scenarios with, you know, he has 30, he's hot, he's dragging them to what looks like a game 7. He's going up for a dunk to like cap a huge run that was basically his personal run. And then, you know, tears the ACL, comes back on the floor, shoots the free throws, tries to go back on defense. But they say, no, go to the back to get it checked out. He tells Kerr, 2 minutes. I'll be back in 2 minutes. He leaves on crutches and we haven't seen him again. And he was, right, I believe, 29 at the time. And he's going to turn 32 pretty soon.
It's tough. Last night, along those same lines, I saw the news about Michael Porter Jr. in Denver. And Mike Singer of the Denver Post broke the story about how he has a nerve situation with his back, already had 2 back surgeries. And it made me think of Klay. And I was actually telling one of my sons, like, this longer I cover this league, you kind of reach a point where you just kind of realize it's cliche, but true. Money doesn't buy happiness. All right, fine. These dudes are filthy rich, but they love playing basketball. And I just hate seeing guys who get put on the shelf, especially in their prime. And with Klay, you know, it's not the type of thing I've ever seen for that long. I mean, quick context for you, Slater, that crosses my mind just as far as kind of wrapping your mind around what Clay's been through. I saw Sean Livingston recently at a Warriors game. And for me, I'm not around the team all the time. With COVID, I haven't seen the Warriors nearly as much as I used to. And I see Sean say hello. He was sitting there talking to Ron Adams down in LA. And I'm thinking, man, Sean was the last Warriors player who I spoke with the night that the Warriors lost to the Raptors in the finals. And, you know, and essentially the last time we saw Clay, and it feels like a lifetime ago. And now Sean is
he's in year two in their front office.
In a front office. He's you know, post playing days are kind of well underway, and he's in a different phase of life. And Clay is still just trying to get back out on the court.
Yeah. I mean, because what really happened was he was like basically to the last stage of his ACL rehab, and he was feeling really good. And you talked to the people that were in LA playing pickup with him, and they were like, man, like Miles Turner was one of the guys, and like everyone there was like, Klay Thompson looks like Klay Thompson, and it was coming off an ACL, and that was a big thing for the Warriors at the time. And then he tore the Achilles, so it was like a full ACL rehab, boom, an Achilles, now a full Achilles rehab. That's why the time has been so long. As far as, you know, we reported he's, you know, fully cleared for practice in the target date. You know, there was a little pushback, I feel like, from the Warriors, but the reality is he's playing 5-on-5 scrimmages. He doesn't have to, even though he's fully able to do every part of practice, he certainly doesn't have to be in like game planning or doing any type of, you know, 5-on-0, but he's physically ready to do anything on the court. Now it's about, from what it's been described to me, it's about basically this is his training camp. And you know, these scrimmages are preseason games, whatever you want to call it. He has about a month until that Christmas week right now to try to get ready. They've already said organizationally they will debut him at home, so that's either going to be December 20th, 23rd, or 28th is kind of, you know, that's kind of where it's trending towards. Those are three home games around that Christmas.
Was that
day.
The you mentioned pushback? Was that the pushback that there's maybe a tiny chance that it's after Christmas?
Well, I mean, certainly that wasn't really the pushback, but look, we all know like it's going to matter how his body responds to all of this, and that's still unpredictable. You know, if 2 weeks from now he's like, man, I'm just really sore after all these games, like sure, you know, they can push it back. But I remember with DeMarcus Cousins, and Kerr has referred to the DeMarcus Cousins situation, they were bringing Cousins back off an Achilles, and they basically picked a date a few weeks in advance that they thought was possible, and Cousins met all the benchmarks and played in this LA game against the Clippers. We'll see with Clay. Again, it's a month. He has to continue to hit these benchmarks. A little of the pushback was the whole like full, you know, he's not fully in team practice. The reality is he could be, but there just are parts of practice he doesn't have to do. If they're installing something for a game tonight, he doesn't have to be part of that game installation, but he is 5-on-5 scrimmaging. And that's the last thing you got to do.
You know what's great for him? I feel like whenever we talk about Klay's return, we always put it in the perspective of how Klay Thompson returning to the Warriors can help this team and make them even better. But the fact that the Warriors are so good is so great for him. Like, I you know, if coming into the season, I think kind of the general perspective of Klay's return was, all right, if they can be pretty good while he's out, and then he can come back and be 80% of himself or 90% of himself or be real Klay Thompson, then all of a sudden this team can be really, really good. I think that's a lot of pressure to put on a guy who is coming back from an ACL and an Achilles. Now, I think it's a lot of pressure to put on an organization to think this guy with an ACL and Achilles injury is going to come back and hasn't played in 900 days and is going to come back and save your team. And now it just kind of feels like they're 15-2. They're so good. If he can give them anything, that's an incredible help and just another addition to a team that is arguably the best in the league right now. I think probably is the best in the league right now. It's just a very low pressure situation for him to return to. They can ease him in with 18 minutes if that's what they want to do. They can ease him in with a low usage role if that's what they want to do. They can give him days off and he doesn't have to feel, oh no, I got to be out there helping my team be able to fight to stay out of the play-in tournament. Like, I just think it's such a good, obviously him coming back is a great position for them, but them being this good is such a good position for him, and it'll make his return so much easier when he comes back.
Well, and not that Klay ever needs motivation, but he's one of those bulletin board guys all the time who's, you know, feeling slighted. And so on the heels of this, you know, him making it clear that he thinks he should have been on the league's list of 75 greats of all time, he's coming back. And, you know, whether it's that list, to me, just kind of represented, if you're him, the tragedy of like your legacy is, you know, undeniably changed because of how long you were on the shelf. I don't think he would have been on the list even if he stayed healthy, but he might have been. You know what I mean?
If he's more in our consciousness over the last couple of years and they're in the playoffs.
Right. Right, right, right. Before we get to our last very juicy topic on the Kings and Luke Walton Slater, just your quick perspective on, you know, the other kind of ripple effect of Clay coming back. I'm curious what you think of Jordan Poole's place when Clay comes back. This dude is, you know, just had back-to-back 30-point games. You know, they've obviously found something, you know, special in its own right with Jordan, but how does he function in that new landscape?
Yeah, well, you know, quickly, as Fred was mentioning, I mean, the 15-2, eight straight double-digit wins at home, including they, you know, they just beat up the Raptors, who generally have been a tough team to play. And a lot of that was, you know, Nick Nurse, known in that finals that we're talking about for boxing wanting Steph Curry, right? He's probably the most audacious of opposing coaches of like, we're throwing everything at Curry. Others beat us. Well, he threw everything at Curry last night. Andrew Wiggins, 32. Jordan Poole, you're mentioning, 33. And I think that they combined shot like, you know, they made 14 threes and gosh, I can't even remember the number, but it was something crazy. I think it was 65 points on 33 shots combined. Poole, they're going to slide into a six-man role. You know, Klay Thompson, when he's ready, will be the starting shooting guard. Nobody's disputing that. Not even Jordan Poole could. Now, it is going to be on him from a maturity standpoint to handle a, you know, demotion, whatever you want to call it. Just probably diminished minutes, diminished spot in the pecking order, even if he understands why it's coming. But, you know, you've seen him at his best a lot this year when Steph Curry's off the floor and he's kind of the lead guard. I mean, you saw it in Detroit, the game I mentioned that Steph Curry injures his hip or bangs up his hip taking a charge on James Harden, plays actually the next game and has 20 in the fourth quarter as they come back and beat the Cavaliers, but then sits on the second night of a back-to-back in Detroit. And the thought is, man, that they're kind of punting this one. Well, then Poole goes out there and like you said, scores 30, and he had kind of been slumping before that. And it, you know, his shot selection can kind of wax and wane when there's doing a lot of the Steph stuff and suddenly the ball hot potatoes over to him. And he's like, well, I haven't had a three in a while. Let me chuck this one up. They're kind of trying to rein that in a little bit. They're using a tough love approach with him. Andre Iguodala, Draymond Green, just, you know, yell at him and make comments, to him. Cause, you know, he's one of those guys where the confidence runs so hot that it's like best to rein him back, where I think they use the same different approach with Wiseman, the opposite approach of like trying to bump the confidence up. But, to your point, I think he fits as a sixth man. And that's one thing these Warriors haven't necessarily had, even in the dynasty years, was like the microwave score. And, If he's playing all the non-Curry minutes, which they already stagger him, so he is, that's just, you know, that's a dimension that this Warriors team hasn't necessarily had off the bench. It's always had the strength in numbers, the smart players, the great passers. But how about a guy that just can come out on any given night and go 25 off the bench in 20 minutes?
Right, right.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is meme mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
As we look at the coaching front here and talk Kings, you know, it has me thinking a bit about, I think pretty soon here on the pod, we'll probably do a robust Coach of the Year debate because we're getting to that part of the season, right? So we've gone through Laker talk where Frank Vogel is, I think, under a fair amount of pressure to get this thing right. I think Frank's having a tough experience right now. You know, then we talk Warriors, Steve Kerr, low-key is doing a really, really, really nice job. They come out of this developmental time as they evolve post Kevin Durant. And now, you know, they're off and running. Luke Walton, obviously with his previous Warriors ties and Lakers ties, you know, he spent 2 years and 13 games trying to get these Kings in the right direction, and mostly the same core of players the entire time, a group that has really not accomplished much. And, you know, De'Aaron Fox was on his way seemingly last season, 25-7, had a real uptick in his game, has not played well this year. And you guys know the story. They lose 7 games out of 8, lose a lot of them in bad form. The other night, I was at the game against Utah at the Golden 1 Center. And for all the years that I've been around the Kings, you know, it's on the, I'd say, the top 10 list of memorable evenings just from a optic standpoint.
Sam Amick, I want to get the play-by-play of the hurling fan.
I'm concerned for the listeners in the audience. You know, some people, like my wife, doesn't like to, if you talk about nauseousness, things like that, she'll flip you off. I don't want to lose listeners here.
Let the listeners know it. You know how the fast-forward button on your disclaimer. Podcast?
Like, you're gonna lose a co-host if you talk about it for too long. So, I know. Let's
put like maybe a 3 to 4 minute limit on it. And if you are not interested in throw up stories as a podcast listener, just hit that like 30 second forward button about five times and you'll get fired.
So here's how I'll frame it, and I'm not helping our listeners at all because it's about to get a little bit even nastier. We just had an exciting addition to the Athletic podcast crew by bringing on Michelle Beadle, right? So Michelle had Paul Pierce on her pod the other day and made news with Paul talking about the old wheelchair incident that he was a part of, and lo and behold, they're debating what a human does if they go to the bathroom on themselves. And I'm sitting there listening to this pod going, what in the hell? Now, the other night, I see this fan sitting courtside who threw up all over himself, and I'm first thought I had was Paul was wrong. You need a wheelchair in this situation. This dude needed to be trucked out of there. It was unbelievable how sick he got, and it was all over the floor. But the optics, obviously, this is a night when Luke Walton's under fire. Luke Walton, we know, was under pressure, and the idea that his last night on the job was this kind of a scene was fitting in some ways because the team had played terribly. But I admittedly, I kind of feel bad for Luke. It's a tough way to go out, but you knew it was coming, and I don't even know where to start. They add or bring on Alvin Gentry, gets promoted. They thought seriously about Doug Christie. You know, that became a negotiation where I think, Doug, to an extent, was used as leverage against Alvin because, you know, he was pushing to get as much as he could with his situation. But it's also, it's the same old story. It's 6 coaches in the 8 years that Kings owner Vivek Ranadive has had the team. I personally don't believe that this is going to spark any kind of uptick. This team, roster-wise, I don't think is as playoff caliber as the front office believes. And that's essentially what drove the move, was that they have publicly stated we got to get in the playoffs. But the mood locally, from the guy getting sick to the rest of the fans, is yet again is incredibly sour at a time when, you know, you come out of a pandemic where they lost $100 million+, you know, because of that situation. I mean, it's bad from every angle. You guys can tackle it however you want, but obviously more King stuff.
So my first reaction is give those maintenance workers like the largest raise you possibly can. Yeah. Like larger than Alvin Gentry, is that dude threw up on the sideline and then just sat there while these other people came over to clean.
He could barely walk out. I don't know if you guys saw him when they told him to leave. Nobody wanted to touch him. So he walked out under his own power. But I was shocked that he didn't just fall over because he was absolutely teetering. And it was utterly disgusting. Even you can tell as we started talking about it, I was kind of all in the beginning, and I'm like losing my stomach for it.
Did
really
you see
quickly
the
here.
Gobert quote where Gobert was like, say? I made eye contact with him. I hope he's okay. It was weird. Like, you know, I'm paraphrasing right now, but Rudy basically said it was weird. He was smiling and throwing up. He was like smiling at me and throwing up. It was like, that sounded like such, it was right near the Jazz bench too. Oh, you had the mascot over there. And
I tweeted this. You also, Fred, you're dead on about the cleanup crew. Also major props to the in arena production Kings crew, Scott Moak, their announcer who's been there forever, does a great job. They took all the attention off the guy, and I don't know if this came through on the telecast, but they started a dance off with a dude in like the bleachers, this like guy, you know, dad bod, classic suburban dude who started dancing in the kind of way that for some reason people thought was hilarious. Then they did a split screen with him and this other dude, and people were digging it. And it was actually really funny. And, you know, this was them buying time while they had, like, the cleanup job took like 20 minutes. It took a long time.
You want to look, I was watching the game, and Sam, this is kind of what you're referring to, but like, this wasn't a normal regular season game. You felt the Luke Walton presser building. I mean, the night before, this was the second night of a back-to-back, the night before they had got just run off the floor by the Raptors, and the crowd in the fourth was chanting fire Luke Walton. And so they play in the second night of a back-to-back, and you're sitting there like, I'm watching the game like, you know, Luke Walton's job could be on the line tonight. There just felt like so much tension. And then suddenly, you know, and by the way, they're losing, you know, they're letting go of the rope again in the fourth. This happened in the fourth quarter. And then the throw up thing happens. And you, like you mentioned, the 20-minute break. And as that 20-minute break's going, you're sitting there thinking like, that's it, right? You know, it's just like for that to just be the capper.
And Vivek is sitting courtside next to Matina Kolokotronis, the team president on the business side, or chief operating officer, and then John Reinhardt, another one of their top execs. So the power brokers were all there. They're all watching it. You knew the writing was on the wall. You also knew after the Toronto loss, my sense was it's that classic case of like, all right, are they really going to serve up the new coach to the Utah Jazz as his debut? So you kind of felt like you knew it was coming, but they just had to go ahead and lose to the Jazz as well. And then they'd be on their way. But after the Jazz game, you know, I ended up connecting with an NBA person afterwards right by the arena, almost buying time for this news to happen. And then it didn't happen. And I probably headed home at like midnight that night, went to bed a little surprised that it hadn't happened. Obviously, we woke up to it. But again, for basketball purposes, I mean, I'm curious what your guys' opinion is. Alvin's obviously an experienced, you know, respected head coach, a guy, you know, who track record is up and down, you know, finest moment certainly has taken the Suns to the West Finals a long time ago when he took over from Mike D'Antoni, and offensively very strong, defensively not known as his forte. Great locker room guy, I think maybe has a little something to prove, not prove, but a little edge on chip on his shoulder after the New Orleans situation where he was, you know, it's all been reported, was kind of disparaged by GM Dave Griffin. So, I mean, I'm fine with the, you know, them putting Alvin in the spot. I don't know basketball wise if it's going to make a difference here.
Well, Alvin has a history of coaching in some places where there are some management issues, right? There at least,
indeed,
or at least uncoordinated management with a coaching staff. Like he was with the Clippers many, many years ago. New Orleans, the situation with management with him and Griff fell off near the end, and that obviously led to his ousting there. He's a very good offensive coach. I don't know what this does.
It's red meat for the fans. That's all it feels like. And it's,
yeah.
And it's also, you know, it's a Luke Walton tenure that is, you know, as you guys remember, year one got off to a really rocky start because of the off-court stuff that took a lot of the positive buzz out of Luke's arrival in Sacramento. He, you know, that gets through that year two, a little bit of progress, but such a weird tenure in general. And the fans were never, it seemed, you know, I didn't run around taking polls, but it didn't seem like he ever had
Neighbor a ton John of local must have been backing. Out, Fred. Neighbor John must have been out. That's
he was actually at the end. Neighbor John was okay. he's more upset with that young point guard who's in his fifth year. And
I want to get to that. I mean, with the Gentry thing, you know, I heard James Hamm talking about it, and you know, James is obviously very connected there. Saying like, Luke Walton, like, if the thing is, well, you're getting a coach in there who's connected to the locker room. Luke Walton had the locker room, right? I mean, like, this wasn't a player-driven thing. So, like, you know, even if Alvin has it, that's not...
I think some stuff happened at the end. Okay. Not meaning stuff... I'm not saying any sort of fireworks internally.
I mean, the Bagley stuff is, like, tough.
The Bagley stuff, and I'm just... Let me just contextualize real fast later, and I'll throw it back to you. But, like, the Bagley stuff, I do think, ultimately didn't help because... The front office and ownership is getting embarrassed because his agent tweets out, you know, Jeff Schwartz, very influential guy from XL, founder of XL, you know, making the Kings look bad. Well, that's born out of Luke, choosing not to play Marvin. So, you know, you can connect those dots where ownership and front office probably are like, man, now we're kind of catching strays because of what the coach is doing. We are looking bad. I don't think those optics helped. The other thing here is that De'Aaron Fox and Tyrese Haliburton and the Davion Mitchell mix, I do think is like we, you know, wondered coming into the season is a bit of an issue because Fox, I think when he goes to bed at night right now, he thinks a fair amount of his struggles are due to the way he's being used and the way that the mix is not conducive to what he does.
Well, the other thing on Gentry, I was going to mention, you know, Fred talked about it like, you know, he's a really good offensive coach. Well, Alvin Gentry controlled the offense. He was their offensive, you know, this isn't a new offensive mind being dropped into the mix. This is the guy that controlled their offense. And offense, again, hasn't been the problem. Defense remains their bottom 10 defensive team. And Fox just needs to be fixed. I'm looking at the numbers right now. You know, 19 a game after he was at 25 last year, 41% shooting after he was at 48 last year, 24% from three after he was at 32% last year. Sure, maybe there's a little bit of an issue with the fit, but I don't even think the numbers bear it out where he's better when Halliburton's off the floor and he's worse when he, you know, Halliburton's next to him. He just doesn't look very good. He looks slower. He looks more unsure of the jumper. He's just not the same player. And I think if the De'Aaron Fox that was there last year is here this year, I think they have a few more wins. And I think Luke Walton might still be here.
I agree.
Yeah.
And not only that, but I mean, so you're right. The numbers don't back it up. You know, the narrative that you would hear from different people around the league is that always off the ball too much. Well, his usage is 3 percentage points down. Pace is another thing that comes up. I haven't studied the tape, but like the idea that they're throwing ahead to Tyrese a lot more, you know, when De'Aaron thinks, you know, he needs to be the guy running the break every single time. But to your point about if Fox not only played better, but was seemingly in a better place, Luke might still be around. I think that's probably true. I don't know if you guys caught his media the other night after the Toronto game. And it was, I mean, the vibe and the mood and the spirit was terrible. He sits up there and was asked about the pressure on Luke and does that put pressure on the rest of them? And I'm paraphrasing, but he essentially said, there's not really pressure. It's not like this is the playoffs. It's not like this is the finals. And I'm going, man, bro, like, first of all, you don't know anything about the playoffs. Secondly, like, this is real pressure and there's your guy, there's your voice who is being pretty blasé about the state of affairs. I thought it spoke volumes about at the end what was kind of happening player dynamic wise.
Yeah, I mean, pace needs to be better. They led the league in pace their last year with Dave Yeager, and we saw what happened there. I also find pace to be an extraordinarily overrated statistic. Like, playing fast inherently does not correlate with playing good offense. And
it also makes it tougher to defend. You know, like, that's the other part. Defense is their number one problem.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, they also, like, they get into their sets late too a lot. And again, offense hasn't been a problem, but they'll run up and then not really run a set. And when they run a set, they'll get into them late. And that's a different form of pace, which can hurt you as well. I have one piece of Kings optimism for us though, which is that Holmes and our guy Alex Len, when he's been able to play, have been actually pretty good defending the rim, and they've been, if you look at their shot profile, like, it's okay. It's not the shot profile of a bottom five, bottom seven defensive team, and you dig a little further into it, and teams are just, they're giving up a lot of mid-range shots, which is a good thing for a defense, and teams are just sinking an abnormally large number of mid-range shots against them. So I don't think they're like the 15th best team in the NBA, but maybe they're a little bit better defensively, and maybe that'll even out throughout the season a little bit more. And if they can maintain as a top half of the league offensive team, maybe Gentry implements some other things. Like maybe that ends up being, you know, a play-in team, because they should be like the 10th or 9th team in the West. Like they should be, just because there are so many teams in the West who are just not good or not trying to win, or Houston or Oklahoma City and so on.
Leave it up to Fred Katz to find like a, you know, defensive metric to shine some bright light on the Sacramento Kings at their lowest.
There we go. I can spin the
Kings.
He's
talking about like the way Alex Lynn is keeping teams in the floater range. I love it. We gonna see. I mean, look, I agree with Fred. Like, I think we talked about it last week when we were talking about Sam's report, you know, basically preemptively saying like this is gonna happen. He's probably getting fired. Like they should be better than five teams in the West, and that's all you need to be better than to be in the play-in. So it starts tonight, and by the time people are listening to this, the game's Philly. Already happened, right? It's Sixers Kings in.
So I'm as we speak, and I'm gonna cut us off here in a moment because I'm bouncing out to Sixers shoot around. But the other funny takeaway for me here is, like, as you guys know, with a national role, you know, for me, the Kings Golden One Center is kind of the home headquarters. It's the place where I can connect with all the teams coming through. So it's been such a, not that I'm used to it by now, the Kings vibe in general is typically on the negative side because the team doesn't play well. But I got to tell you, the contrast between my own personal human experience going to these games, because I it's a fairly short commute, which is great for my life. They got electric chargers, Slater, which you can appreciate. I'm going and getting the car charged. Like, it is a nice night out at work, and I'm so happy to be back, you know, around people again. So I go out to games, and by and large, I'm in a really good place when I go to these games. The downtown Commons area is better than ever. It's cool to see downtown Sacramento hopping after games where there's restaurants and bars, and you got like positivity all over the place. And then, you know, there's about a 40-minute experience typically between, you know, mid third quarter to mid fourth quarter where you get sucked into this, oh my God, I forgot how miserable these fans are. And you get pulled into a different energy. It's temporary, you know, and it doesn't affect me. I'm not out there caring what happens with the game, but it's wild because I feel like I'm hovering above all of it. And on the one hand, it's same as it ever was, right? They've been struggling, haven't been in the playoffs since 2006, but it's even more unique because of the surroundings, because there is so much positivity happening in the city around this place where they can't win basketball games. And the arena itself is gorgeous. The one thing
it's
they just
can't. My
favorite
arena in the league.
Yeah.
Ooh.
I mean,
that's my favorite arena.
I don't think you're alone.
It's awesome.
Yeah, no,
it's awesome. The way they localize that, it's not just that it's nice. Like the way they localize the arena, the way they, there are some arenas that are beautiful, but if I drop you in the middle of them, you don't know where you are.
Right.
You just know you're at a wonderfully architecturally just constructed arena.
Right.
And there it's like they've got the food court with the old signs from old businesses in Sacramento and the Kings logo made of old players' shoes. And it's like, it is cool.
And
it is incredibly cool.
Such a departure from Arco, right? Arco way out towards the airport, nothing around. So,
and it's only getting better. I mean, even I went to the guy I met with was at there's a Hyatt Centric hotel right by the arena. So it's like, oh man, there's a hotel over here I didn't even know about. With kind of a
hotel.
Sweet hotel. Fun. Yeah. And I mean, there's all kinds of spots to go. It's like they got everything right, but the team, they can't figure the team out.
Have you seen the Alex Len defensive metrics, though? I mean, my thing is, we are spinning.
Dude, Rashawn Holmes is like a breath of fresh air. No, they better not mess him up.
Rashawn Holmes has been good. Yeah. I was very skeptical of that contract, and he's been better this year than he was last year. And here's some inside info
for
people on the outside. There's no way they know this. The Kings put out these cookies in the media room.
Oh,
that are so good.
Although there's been a few complaints lately, Fred. They're not coming out like they used to.
What?
It's like one round of the cookies terrible. And then they're gone. And people, I had a scout the other day that was like, hey, Sam, you got some pull around here. Can you say something about the cookies?
They're so good. I can't even begin to describe how good the cookies are in the Kings media room.
Yeah, Rashawn Holmes, that is the one thing. They better not mess this kid up. Fred, just because I know how much you love oral histories, I think I'm going to do an oral history on Rashawn's push shot. Like, that is the one thing I enjoy watching when I go to watch Kings basketball. So, guys, I'm going to bounce. Speaking of dysfunctional teams, I got to go see what's up with the Sixers and how they're feeling. We will get with you next week. I appreciate you as always, and we'll talk to you. Thanks for joining us, everybody.